All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, Tetley once insured their chief tester's taste buds for £1 million.
During World War II, the UK's entire supply was evacuated from London to keep it safe.
And the British Standards Institution has a 5,000-word instruction manual on the correct way to make it.
It's tea! Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Manu and I'm here with my fellow QI elves, Jack and Alex. Hello.
Hello, Manu.
Hi. Oh, I've been very excited for this one.
We've all got tea in front of us and I know I've not made it up to Jack's standards.
Oh,
like,
well.
I was stirring the tea bag and I'm like, Jack's going to hate this.
Should we get into this?
This is trendy tea. This is biscuit tea.
It's really nice,
this
Alex.
Is tea,
Thank you.
Tea that is made to taste like a biscuit has been dunked in it.
Yeah, which I think is magic.
It smells like
it's
custard,
my new favorite thing.
Custard creams.
So we've made it to tea,
mm-hmm.
the thing that this country is obsessed with, to the point of, I actually kind of think, to the point of cringe.
I know what you mean.
The way that some people go on about tea in this country.
I mean,
chill out, guys.
There's not a lot else going on. The weather's not great, and we talk about that enough. So, gotta have
the economy's
something.
The toilet. Yeah,
yeah, <you chew. laughs>
What kind of tea are we talking about?
There's only one variety of tea plant that we use to make tea,
yes,
right?
This is
which
amazing.
Is, there are lots of different types of tea that you can buy in the shops, but they all come from one variety.
Camellia sinensis, am I right?
Yeah, because I was thinking when we were researching this, like, are we including pouring some hot water on a flower or like tea
what,
is
you mean, like,
it's quite broad, like herbal teas and stuff.
Yeah, they're infusions from, you know, hot water, let's say. Today we'll just talk about things you can make from fermented Camellia sinensis plants.
Very
which
nice.
Includes green tea and black tea and white tea and yellow tea and oolong and lapsang souchong. Not rooibos, not red bush. That actually comes from a different plant, which is technically a pea. So if you make a cup of rooibos tea, you're actually making a cup of pea.
Yeah, it is as popular as we think it is tea. It is the most popular drink in the world after water.
Really?
Which is madness. But yeah, we drink 5 billion cups of it every day. Way more than coffee. So coffee, globally, we only drink about 2.25 billion cups a day.
Oh,
so
right, so
way overtaking coffee.
Yeah, yeah. I guess tea is most commonly associated with China, where it's indigenous to, and there are about 1.4 billion people in China. And then also it's quite popular in India, which is also 1.4 billion people. So between them, they've got almost 3 billion.
The number of people working in the tea industry in China is almost double the population of the UK.
What?
That's mad.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So they are the biggest producer of tea.
Yes.
Damn.
I'd hope so. Should we do a quick history of tea?
Yes. It's a big one. So historians think we started harvesting tea around 2700 BCE in China. That's where it was first grown.
And we should make like a cool... You remember Top Gear had a cool wall? We should do like a timeline of the first time we've had food.
Oh,
yeah,
that'd be lovely.
What's our oldest food? Is it bread or wine?
I mean, grain, like grainy porridgey stuff is
really
definitely
old.
Up there. It's, talking about porridgey stuff. So historians think that the way that tea was first prepared wasn't as a drink. It was like used as a leafy vegetable and mixed into a porridgey gruel.
Cool. Everything was a porridge back
then. They loved porridge back
then. I'm so glad I live in 2025. Can you imagine? Like...
But yeah, and then we've been brewing it, so using it in a liquid form only for about 1,500 years.
Oh. Interesting. Yeah. It's also interesting you use the word brewing, because I've often told people off for like claiming, let the tea bag brew for 3 minutes, because I think the process of brewing by definition involves some fermentation and chemical change. I think what you should say is leave your tea bag to steep for 3 to 5 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
But then, you know, language evolves. But
you sound like a southern wanker.
Now I do sound like a southern wanker when I live with my northern housemates and they're like, do you want a brew? And I'm like, technically.
Give me a steep.
Give me a steep.
Oh. Have you heard about the legend of how tea was discovered?
I don't know. Go on.
I've picked two of my favourites. Mm-hmm. So the biggest one is it was discovered by Emperor Shennong, who was this kind of mythical deity of agriculture and taught people how to farm and find loads of food.
In ancient China.
Ancient China. And the story goes is that he was looking for new plants to eat and he accidentally poisoned himself 72 times.
Oh my God.
But before the plants could kill him, a tea leaf fell into his mouth, which revived him and he was fine. And he was like, oh, this is amazing. I feel great. And then gave tea to the people.
So we're telling everyone that if you have poison, and just put a tea leaf in you, and
especially,
it's the antidote to all poisons.
72 times.
Yeah, this story doesn't stack up on any level. Yeah.
Well, I like it. And then the Buddhist myth is to do with apparently Gautama Buddha fell asleep when he was meant to be meditating.
Oh, yeah.
And when he woke up, he was so angry with himself that he ripped out all of his eyelashes and threw them to the wind.
What?
And then wherever they fell, tea grew. And you can see where they got the idea from, because the leaves are kind of fluffy on the underside and they look kind of like eyelashes. And then in the 9th century, tea made its way over to Japan. Which is why they've got so many incredible tea rituals as well. Like, they have taken it and run with it, and they've got their own thing. And then in the 16th century, the Dutch started shipping it over to Europe, and that's when we all got hooked.
Okay.
Have you heard about Catherine of Braganza?
I have, yes. So she was a Portuguese queen who married Charles II in 1662, and as part of the diplomatic relations, Portugal basically gave the city of Bombay as part of a dowry. So the British took over what is now Mumbai.
God, imagine if you're one of the other guests.
Yeah.
And you just like wrapped up a saucepan or whatever it is.
But by all accounts, she seemed to be a very fashionable woman who didn't give two shits about what the sort of orthodox was. Mm-hmm. So when she had her cup of fashionable tea, she was like, can I have some milk? And everyone was like, milk, madam? And she was like, yeah, I drink milk in my tea. And then everyone started copying her, especially in high society. Mm-hmm. So they started putting milk in their tea.
So she popularized the kind of afternoon tea break in the UK.
Course.
Like, before that, it wasn't really a thing. And then she decided, you know what? I need a little pick-me-up around 4 to 5 p.m. That's all Catherine,
really?
Apparently. So similar to the Chinese ones. Apparently, mm-hmm. they had like all of the same kind of
earthenware cups.
Exactly.
Because before Catherine, people would just take it as medicine. Because they understood the sort of reviving qualities. And it was expensive because it had come all the way from China.
It was still expensive after Catherine. It's just people wanted to do it more,
exactly,
I think.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was really surprised about is I'd heard about the Opium Wars. I didn't realize how much of it was to do with tea drinking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fast forwarding about 200 years.
Yeah.
Right? So Britain, the East India Company specifically, has a trade with China.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, really wants tea, and China has a monopoly on it. And to convince China, that is oversimplifying intensely, but it starts sending them opium that it's growing from other parts of its colonies, India and Afghanistan, basically getting China hooked on opium.
Mm-hmm.
I read it in 1906, 23% of Chinese men were addicted to opium.
It's mad.
Which is pretty outrageous to be like selling people this addictive substance in return for tea. So the Chinese just got so desperate for more opium because they're all hooked on it, you know, chemically, that they started having to give us more and more tea. But yeah, it caused an awful lot of suffering.
Okay, so at this point, everyone is completely addicted to tea. It's the world's favorite thing, but it's still only being produced in China.
Mm-hmm.
Until a man called Robert Fortune comes along.
Oh, well, this is crazy, this
it's
story.
It's mad.
This is like the most problematic adventure I've ever heard of by today's standards.
So basically, in 1848, Britain, to add insult to injury, so this was whilst all of the Opium Wars and all this conflict was going on, they were like, okay, we're going to send them drugs, but just to be sure, we're going to smuggle tea out of China because tea production was such a closely guarded secret.
And this is tea plants, so that they could actually go and grow it elsewhere.
So tea plants and the process of making tea, because that was also a really like tightly guarded secret. So they sent Robert Fortune, this British botanist, to take cuttings of the plant and to steal all of their tea making secrets. But he literally dressed up as a Chinese person. to smuggle himself into factories, and then he pulled it off. Like, he got the cuttings. He even managed to, like, steal some Chinese tea makers and tea producers with their expertise.
Well, apparently he was not, he didn't look like a Chinese person.
No, he didn't, which is why I'm like, how did you do this? Anyway, so he managed it, and they took all of this stuff to India, and that's how they started growing tea there.
Wow. Again, it's another story of, like, a bottleneck. One person did this one thing.
Yeah.
And it changed the course of history. Yeah. So the word tea.
Yes.
What does it mean? Where does it come from?
Well, it seems to come from a specific corner of southeastern China and what is now Taiwan, which isn't common to the rest of China. In Mandarin, the word is cha. Mm. And what's interesting is the countries that received their tea via the sea generally call it tea, because Taiwan is basically on the coast. It has ports. Mm-hmm. So people would pick it up from that region. Mm-hmm. They'd ask the locals, not particularly politely, but they'd be like, what's this? And they'd say, oh, it's tea. And then, so that's why we call it tea in England and in Germany and France. They're all versions in and the Dutch word, and Afrikaans as well, because they stop off in Cape Town. And in Java and Australia, the Maoris even call it tea. But the places where it went through the Silk Road overland got it from inland China, where they called it cha. And that's why it's called chai in India, and chai in Russia, and chai in Persia and Arabia and Turkey. So yeah,
that's interesting. That's really interesting. Wondered why chai and tea, like, both existed.
And it's whether it's come across land or via sea.
Okay, it is time for our first lunchbox, and today that is mine. So there are lots of different ways to make tea. It's a very emotive thing. People get very excited about it. Jack, I know you have a very specific way of making
tea. Yeah, how long have
you
got? Because I can talk about hours.
I'm going to make you the worst cup of tea that you have ever had. So we're going to talk about how I made the water, and we're going to talk about making the actual tea, the brew. And then we're going to talk about the milk.
Okay.
Okay.
Not looking forward to it.
No. Me neither, Alex.
Okay, so we've already got our mugs of water in front of us. And I saw you heating these up in the microwave.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's guilty as charged.
You bitch.
That's fair. That is fair. In America, it's apparently quite common to start making your tea this way, because kettles... don't know why, not a big thing over there.
Yeah, so they have them, but they're not in every house.
So making tea can start with microwaving your water. Apparently, it's catching on in this country as well. Over 58% of British Gen Zers have microwaved their water to make tea, and a sixth of them do it, like, every day.
Wow. You don't have to say British Gen Zers, you just say Gen Z. It's like how 50 cent is roughly 23 and a half pence over here.
The most important thing is that you get the water up to boiling, right?
Yeah.
And it probably doesn't in a microwave.
Well, temperature is important. Mm-hmm. So a kettle stops boiling when the water reaches 100 degrees, okay? So as long as you pour it quite quickly after it clicks off, it will be 100 degrees. And that's the ultimate temperature for making black tea. Green tea, interestingly, slightly lower, about 85 to 90 degrees is perfect. If you're making it in a microwave, there's no guarantee that it will get to 100 degrees. Seriously.
Also, if you're heating water in a microwave and it's, like, undisturbed, it can superheat.
Yes.
And so as soon as you put the tea bag in, it can explode and you can burn yourself.
The ultimate cup of tea.
It's kind of like how, like, the water in a pan or a kettle will bubble because it's churning and it's disturbed. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of that energy is being released.
Yeah.
Whereas it sometimes doesn't in a microwave, and it sits there, but then the moment you disturb it, all the bubbling happens at once.
Yeah, exactly.
It's quite dangerous.
But the other thing is, the best cups of tea have water at 100 degrees. If you're at altitude, the pressure's lower and you can't get water to 100 degrees, which is why you always have a bad cup of tea on a plane, for instance.
Or up a mountain.
And so I've always wanted to, like, go down to the bottom of the Marianas Trench and make a cup of tea with, like, 105 degree water and see if it's, like, the best cup of tea I've ever had.
That principle work? Are you going to have a better cup of tea?
But that's what I don't know, because obviously we suggest, like, the hotter the better, but at sea level, as soon as water reaches 100 degrees, it turns to gas. So, like, you can't physically make it hotter.
Yeah.
And that's why I want to test it out, because it may be that the perfect cup of tea is brewed at 105 degrees or 110, 150.
How are you going to come back from that though? Really?
Well, you mean every other cup of tea will be unpleasant.
I thought you meant physically to the bottom of the sea. But it's even true when air pressure drops during stormy weather.
Really?
Yeah, people say that there is a noticeable change in the cups of tea because that's of the boiling amazing. Point, but also because the kind of stormy, humid air dulls our taste senses a little bit. So it tastes a little bit off.
So microwave the water, and then I found some instant tea. I had no idea this was a thing. So this is from Taifu, but other brands are available, unfortunately.
So it's like a kind of...
Looks like yeast.
Yeah, it's like a sort of paler cocoa.
Yeah, and it smells really weird. It's got instant black tea with whitener, so kind of milk substitute.
Okay, so there's milk in it already.
Yeah, it's like completely instant tea.
So I can understand like why this would make sense if all you've got access to is water.
Uh-huh. You don't have a fridge, yeah.
You know when we spoke about the process of making instant coffee? Mm-hmm. So that freeze drying or spray drying, that's the same way that they make instant tea. So they'll brew the tea, liquid form, and then they'll dry it out and blitz it up and mix it with this lovely stuff. Wow. So should we give it a go?
I guess so.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna let you guys do it yourself.
Okay. Is it one teaspoon per? One for me. One for Jack. For Manu.
Seems very
It is turning into tea.
It looks tea coloured.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Oh god, just nothing. Like
It looks like tea and tastes like nothing.
Tastes like hot water.
Horrible. Oh, okay. And now the sort of sediment is appearing on the top.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Anyway, so that is a very bad cup of tea.
Some tea slang. Mm-hmm. Apparently, when you pour water onto the tea leaves, the Victorians called that the agony of the leaves, because they start kind of unfurling under the heat. And they also refer to bitching the pot you prepare a teapot for yourself and others. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, I learned from a guy in the British Army, the British Army standard was milk and two sugars. Mm-hmm. And then if you wanted it without the sugar, it was called a julie. And if you wanted it without sugar or milk, it was called a whoopee, because they were white nuns and black nuns.
Whoopi Goldberg and Julie Andrews.
Exactly, in the famous films where they play nuns.
Now that you say that, I can't believe they never did a crossover. Sister Act, Sound of Music. It's two musical nuns.
That would have been fantastic.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of the British Army, did you know that since 1945, all British Army tanks have been equipped with tea-making facilities inside?
Nice. So awesome. Wonder how many people can you fit in a tank, like a standard?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think probably four in the biggest.
Okay. Tea party in a tank.
Is that a collective noun for British Army soldiers?
Bitching the tank.
It's
when you put the men in.
I mean, obviously, this what we've got in front of us is disgusting. But why is it so far removed from our regular rituals?
I think the worst thing for me about this is that I can now see the milk, which presumably was condensed milk, coagulating on the top.
There's a bit of a scum to it.
And actually, that's kind of interesting, because I guess there's a big debate on whether you put the milk in first, before or after the tea. In this case, it's gone in at the same time.
Wow, we found this magic third part.
The worst third option.
Yeah. So the two, classically, the two parties are you're either a Miffy or you're a Tiffy. Okay. So milk in first, Miffies. Tea in first, Tiffy's.
Got it.
So
I'm a MILF. Milk in last.
Finally.
The Miffies, they say one of the most important reasons why you put the milk in first is because if you put milk straight into hot tea, like a big mug of hot tea, it can ruin the milk and make it kind of like separate and not give it a very smooth mouthfeel.
Kind of like curdle.
Yeah. Whereas if you put the tea in slowly into the milk, apparently it mixes in more nicely. So the Tiffy's argument, which I think makes way more sense, is that if you're putting the milk in after you're brewing the tea properly, because it's like at a hot temperature, and then you can control the strength of your milky tea more easily.
But it also makes a difference whether you steep it in a teapot or not.
Oh,
really?
I think the Miffy argument only works if you're using a teapot, because I don't think anyone would approve of putting the milk in, adding a tea bag, putting the kettle on, and then the milk kind of soaks into
I've
the tea
seen,
bag.
I know it's done. People do it.
But that feels a bit.
It does feel a bit wrong.
Me.
It doesn't feel a bit messy. There is an official answer.
Is there
yes,
now?
Yes, the International Organization for Standardization, or ISO, that is a global body that issues technical standards around the world. So that they are the reason that paper sizes, we have A4 and A5 and A6 around the world, and it's all the same.
Because these guys crack the whip.
Yes, that is ISO 216.
That's paper. Hot. That's pretty hot.
ISO 8601, date and time formats.
Which the Americans don't.
Exactly. Not everyone adheres to everything, but ISO 4217. Currency codes, so the fact that the sterling is GBP around the world and US dollars USD. ISO 3103 is the international standard for preparing a cup of tea. It was issued in 1980.
Okay. 1980.
Yeah, exactly. The year of the tea. They're not trying to tell people how to make a cup of tea.
Okay. Mm.
It was more about, we've talked about this before, in laboratory conditions, in factories, you need standards,
references,
standard ways to make things. So I'm going to read the official ISO instructions. So use a standard pot and cup.
ISO standards for those.
White porcelain. Brew 2 grams of tea leaves per 100 milliliters of freshly boiling water for 6 minutes.
Okay, this is loose leaf.
Yeah. Strain into the cup. If milk is required, add it to the cup before pouring the infused tea.
So that's still milk first.
It's milk first, but it's milk after the tea has been steeped.
Blown this thing wide open.
And then sugar is not part of the standard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don't tell the British Army.
There is another argument for putting the milk in the cup first, and that is because it's a practice that originated in the 18th century when porcelain was more fragile and more likely to crack if you poured completely hot boiling tea straight onto it. Mm-hmm. So it's a way of cushioning the mug, which is something I never considered. When they came up with this ISO in the 80s, there was one country that objected.
Uh-oh.
Guess which country it was.
Guatemala.
No.
Papua New Guinea.
No.
Thailand.
No.
Swaziland.
No. Ireland.
What?
Ireland. Yeah, it was the Irish. Yeah.
Well, actually, I'm not surprised because they drink more tea per capita than the Brits. They probably drink the most tea with milk.
Yeah, they're in the top three for sure. One thing I do find really cool about how you can improve your tea making, tea scum.
Tea scum are the people who put the milk.
Yeah, tea scum. Do you guys know why scum can form on top of your tea sometimes? When it's brewing.
I thought it's because we live in London and the water has been recycled through 100 disgusting different things. And I just have to try and close my eyes and not think about what I'm drinking.
Luckily, you are wrong.
Okay.
If you live in an area with hard water, this area of the world, the south of England, you're way more likely to get a kind of filmy layer on your tea when you're brewing it. In 2021, researchers at the Institute of Food and Nutrition in Zurich found out that it was to do with the way that the polyphenols in the tea were reacting with the minerals in the hard water. And one of the ways you can get rid of the scum is by adding some lemon juice.
It's like by moving to the north.
It's much friendlier to
lemon
be
juice,
fair.
Interesting.
Player 3 has entered the game, the Liffies.
The Liffies.
Oh, God.
Which actually, ironically or fittingly, is a river in Ireland.
Oh, it's all coming together.
Speaking of hard water and soft water, the brand Yorkshire Tea, which is one of the most popular, you're all familiar, it's made by Taylors of Harrogate, and it was designed to pair well with the soft water of Yorkshire. Because they don't grow tea in Yorkshire. It requires...
Oh, it's not from Yorkshire. For Yorkshire.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. The tea comes from presumably India, maybe Kenya, maybe China. Yorkshire is far too cold and low altitude for growing tea.
Yeah, I feel really stupid now. Yeah. I just assumed they made it.
Basically, it was made for the water of Yorkshire, which is very soft. So when you drink it down south in a hard water area like
because
London,
it's now sold all around the country and really popular everywhere. Yeah,
yeah. And Yorkshire tea... make a special hard water version, which you can make delicious tea for in London.
But that's not so non-Yorkshire Yorkshire tea. So when I buy a cup, when I buy a packet of Yorkshire tea in London, it's actually probably not Yorkshire tea. It's like
surely it must be labelled.
Yeah,
like
it's labelled. It's got a green stripe that says hard water.
But then what's it? But if they took normal tea and they adapted it for Yorkshire, and now they're selling it down here. But they've had to adapt it back again.
I don't know how soft or hard the water is in Kenya where they grow
this. This is so dumb.
time for our next lunchbox, and today that is you, Alex.
Right, I have brought this.
Whoa, what is that?
It is a quite peculiar, very British invention. Mm-hmm. It's called the Teasmade.
Ah, ooh.
Recognize it.
This is, I think, probably from the 1980s, maybe early 1990s. But they go all the way back to the 1890s.
Whoa.
As a concept. It's a kind of Wallace and Gromit style contraption that's an alarm clock combined with tea making equipment.
Oh.
And the idea is that you can set your alarm and they will then make you a freshly brewed cup of tea by your bed.
Whoa.
Before you even have to get up.
I'm assuming it starts making the tea before it wakes you up.
Yeah, so you set an alarm. Okay. There's kind of two timers. Mm-hmm. So the first timer will set the tea going, and then the second timer will set the alarm off to wake you up when the tea is made.
Hence the name Teasmade.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's kind of a really good pun. So it like the original one was spelled T-E-E-S-M-A-D-E.
Uh-huh.
And you can be like Teasmade as in the tea's made, but it's also kind of like a maid that makes tea.
An automated.
It's brilliant. So basically, it's kind of like a big boxy appliance. It kind of looks a little bit like an American filter coffee machine, really.
Yeah, yeah,
You've got a teapot in which the tea is going to be brewed.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like a sewing machine.
A little bit like a sewing machine, yeah. Exactly. A little bit of everything. Yeah. What I'll do is I'll just twist the clocks to set the alarm off.
I can hear it boiling.
While it boils, I'll give you a little bit of a potted history.
Cool.
So there are so many different versions of this. As I say, it goes all the way back to 1891. Mm-hmm. The first person to come up with this idea was a guy called Charles Maynard Walker.
Okay.
He created the Early Riser's Friend, which was a sort of modified alarm clock that struck a match in the morning, which lit a spirit lamp under a small boiler, and then
like
when when boiling, the water would then pour into a waiting cup, and then like a whistle would blow to wake the person up. And this is published in a kind of magazine, but he didn't patent it. And the first person to actually patent one just a few months later was Samuel Rowbottom, who patented the automatic tea making apparatus.
Okay.
And his again was gas powered. It required a pilot light on all night, so it's dangerous.
Wow.
And then there were all these different later versions. There was one from 1902 called the clock that makes tea!
I like that one. That's cute. Yeah,
right?
That's great.
And some of them tipped the kettle over. So it would boil the kettle and the kettle would tip over and pour the tea into the mug.
And this is assuming that it's like on your bedside table. So all of this fire and boiling water is going on next to your head,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. While you're unconscious.
Lovely.
Yeah. Things really took off in the 1930s. First commercial electric teas made from a company called Goblin, the Goblin Company, the Goblin Corporation. Yeah. Very weird. There was a real boom post Second World War. In the 1960s, even the clocks had radium to glow in the dark, so you could read the time.
Obviously.
Yeah, and then there was a kind of big decline in the 1980s.
Yeah, why? Because I think with technology, like this could easily just be Wi-Fi driven now. Is that maybe that's why they've died out? Because you can just sort of set a timer remotely on sort of electronic kettle basically in your kitchen.
Now I think that is basically the revival, is that you've got like an Alexa,
make me a cup of tea.
Exactly.
At 6 a.m.
But I don't understand, when I grew up in the 90s and the noughties, we didn't have smart homes back then. And I was thinking, why? We seem to have gone backwards here. Why? See, I can see there's water bubbling out the top of it. It doesn't look right.
This. Oh, God. Oh.
I did try pouring into the...
Oh my God,
it's ready. It's so violent. Imagine waking up to this.
How do I stop it?
Okay, great.
I'm awake now.
And then if
I've never been more awake.
So that's woken us up and it's made the tea. And if I pull out the pot from the holder... There we go. A freshly made pot of tea.
Go on then.
I'll pour this. Oh, I forgot to put the tea bag in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was like a big thing you had to remember the night before to set it up. Put the water in, put the tea bag in. I wanted to bring it on because A, I wanted an excuse to buy one on eBay.
Yeah.
Charge it to the company. B, it's a British invention. And I think really was only really popular in the UK for so many generations. And the fact that it goes all the way back to the 1890s shows that we just have this real obsession with tea. Tea in the mornings and our ritual.
Yeah. There's no coffees made.
This would make coffee very
light. Easy peasy.
You can make anything that required boiling water. You can make soup. Make pot noodle.
Soup's amazing.
Oh, pot noodle in the morning. Oh.
Morning noodle. Yeah, I'd go for that. Yeah.
That sounds filthy.
So yeah, that's the teas made.
Amazing.
And of course, that is the more complicated way to make tea. And what we haven't talked about yet, I guess, is the tea bag.
An Edwardian invention, patented in the first decade of the 20th century. And before then, all tea had been loose leaf. But what's interesting is it was sold in these little silk pouches. It was basically portioned out tea, but intended for you to pour it out.
Oh.
And then people started thinking, hang on, I can cut a corner here. I'll just, you know, shove the whole packaging in and then brew the tea, and then I don't have to strain it.
So it's the consumer that invented it.
The consumer basically invented it, yeah.
That's so clever. Do you reckon people did it intentionally, cutting a corner, or do you think they misunderstood what they were supposed to do with it?
That's a good question. Do you think some sort of bleary-eyed Edwardian woke up and just put the whole thing in, was like, oh, what have I done? And then they were like, hang on a second.
But there's also a competing story. So there is that accidental invention of the teabag. So that story comes from an American tea importer called Thomas Sullivan, who decided to ship his tea in these little silk pouches. And then his customers came to him and were like, dude, have you tried keeping them in the bag, like you said?
Is that a verbatim quote, Manu?
Yeah.
Dude.
I mean, they used it then. But there's another story about two women who intentionally invented the tea bag.
Oh, no, forgotten women of history.
So Roberta C. Lawson and Mary McLaren of Milwaukee, they filed a patent for a tea leaf holder in 1899, which is quite similar to the tea bag that we use today. And they used a kind of meshy tea bag rather than the silk, which let more water flow. And when Thomas Sullivan later adapted his tea bag, we think that he was actually inspired by their earlier patent.
That's amazing that Americans invented the tea bag. I suppose they're all about convenience, aren't they?
It is
lazy, lazy country.
You heard it here.
Who invented tea bagging? When was that patented?
Probably existed before the tea bag, actually. They were like, we need a name for this.
Yeah. Time for our final lunchbox. And today, that is yours, Jack.
I have brought, in the absence of Rosie, I've brought something actually quite tasty. And what I meant is, you always make the tastiest thing, and in your absence, someone had to step up. So I've made a noodle dish, which is made with green tea noodles. So they're actually caffeinated.
They're a lovely colour. Yeah, all right. I'm really ready for some solids off of that too.
Let's do it.
Should we dig in?
Yeah.
Oh, this is delicious. What have we got here? Noodles, crab, omelets.
It's like a cold noodle salad with various toppings, including sliced up ham and tomatoes and cucumber and a lovely, delicious Japanese dressing.
Oh my gosh, that's
the
delicious.
The noodles are amazing.
And so nice cold as well, so refreshing.
I thought this would basically represent how tea isn't... It's such a varied ingredient and you can do so much more with it. Even just in the realm of beverages, like the way we drink tea in the UK is a very specific way of doing it. And we mostly drink black tea. But in China, they mostly drink green tea. And in Japan, they also drink green tea. And a famous one is matcha, which is currently very fashionable.
Apparently there's a world shortage because the demand has shot up so much.
So these are matcha noodles. And that's why they're so green. And that's part of its appeal, because matcha is a green tea that's made with the leaves that are shaded, so they don't get much sun.
So the leaves are greener because they have more...
Chlorophyll.
Chlorophyll.
Yeah.
Because they're working harder.
But is it, I've heard that matcha is also more caffeinated because they keep all of the tea parts in. So when it's pulverized, you're drinking basically the whole tea plant.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not kind of filtering it out and stewing it and getting rid of the leaves.
That's exactly it. So regular green tea is slightly less caffeinated than black tea, but matcha is much more caffeinated. It's almost at the coffee levels.
And probably more ecologically friendly, right? Because you're not wasting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
A random fact I picked up. How much water do you think it takes to make a cup of tea?
Oh, well, a standard mug is about 300 milliliters.
It takes 52 litres.
What?
How big's your mug? Is this like, Sports Direct done an enormous 52 litre mug?
I'm thinking about the whole production process here. So to make a cup of tea with milk and two sugars, 52 litres, because you're factoring in the water the cow drinks.
Okay, thirsty animals.
Over its lifetime, but then divided by the tiny amount of milk you're using.
Got it.
And the cane, you have to grow the sugar cane to grow the sugar. And then all of the transportation costs and the processing, all of that.
Yeah, got
52
it.
Litres for every cup of tea.
What if you feed cows tea?
And then milky and then, tea comes out.
Oh my God.
I don't want to see a caffeinated cow. Like, that's...
Matcha tea originally came from China, even though it's now famous in Japan, but it was banned by the Ming Dynasty in China in 1391 because their predecessors that they took over from, the Song Dynasty, loved making it matcha. So they were like, kind of like how Trump sort of repeals everything that Biden did.
Oh, so it's like a cultural
It's kind of like culturally away. Like, no more matcha. So that's why it's much more Japanese now, because they... It wasn't banned in Japan. They sort of developed the culture of it all. Mm-hmm. And it can make your poo green if you have too much of it. But speaking of tea and poo.
Please don't tell me you've got some to try.
No, I haven't.
So you've also heard of poo tea.
Poutine.
Poutine. No, literally like poo tea, or it's also more politely called insect tea. So basically it's tea that's been made.
It's made by Taipu. Sorry, I'm done.
That was good.
Shatley's.
So it's tea that's been made by leaves that have passed through a specific moth. So it's kind of like Kopi Luwak, you know, that coffee that's been eaten by simmers. Yeah.
A moth, though.
A moth, yeah.
Wow. Is that why they're so like frantic and just won't chill and keep going for the lamps?
Because they're jacked up on tea, yeah. There's a specific brand called Bugger Poop Tea, which uses tea that's gone through the grain moth larvae. And basically what they do is they put the moth larvae in massive piles of tea leaves, and then they wait for them to eat through those, and then they harvest their poo, and then they just keep feeding them.
And what does it do? Why?
What does it?
What's the point?
I think it's like Kopi Luwak. Probably not that nice or not that different. It's just a process that makes it a little bit more wacky, a bit more interesting, and you can charge more for it.
It sounds a little less cruel than Kopi Luwak as well, because they're larvae and they're just eating. They're not being force-fed or kept in a cage.
And they're not mammals, so they don't think they're cute.
Yeah.
But there's also something that sounds way nicer, which is bug-bitten tea. When insects attack a specific kind of tea plant, they start releasing chemicals that signal
The tea plants.
The tea plants are releasing chemical signals that are like, oh my God, I'm getting attacked to the other plants. Or it might even be like something that the bug doesn't like, or it could be trying to call predators towards it to get them to eat the insects off it. Basically, it's releasing a chemical that tastes really sweet and kind of like muscat, kind of white grape.
That's so unfortunate for the tea plant. It's just making itself more delicious to other predators.
The worst part is that when one of these plants starts making that chemical, it signals like a lot of other plants around. Yeah. So it creates tea fields that all have this incredible sweet like aroma to it.
Panic.
Yeah.
We're eating their panic.
I like the taste of panic.
They love the taste of fear. All right, so that is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
That's right, and you can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
And we'll leave you with this indictment on our country's obsession with tea. In 1997, 39 people in the UK went to the emergency room with tea cozy related injuries.
Oh no, where did they stick it?
Yeah, I was going to say. All right, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Alex Bell, and me, Manu Oreo. It was mixed by Li Ying Li and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.